Welcome to Illumination by Modern Campus, the leading podcast focused on transformation and change in the higher education space. On today's episode, we speak with Ajita Talwalkar-Menon, who is president and CEO of Calbright College. Ajita and podcast host Ahmed Alawalia discuss the growing divide of those unable to access higher education and building the right infrastructure around these learners' needs.
Ajita, welcome to the Illumination podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, it's my pleasure. It's really fun chatting with you. Obviously, anyone who's engaged with the evolution knows full well that Calbright College is an institution that we've always sort of loved the story about. When Eloy Oakley led the California Colleges system, we'd had him on a few times to talk about the initiative. In fact, I think he joined our podcast just a few weeks ago and ran brought it up again. So, you know, absolutely an organization that fascinates us. But your story is really interesting as well. Like we look at a lot of modern institutional presidents as having unique stories. You worked in the Obama administration as special assistant for higher ed policy before joining Calbright College in 2020. You've built the college more or less from the ground up. I got to ask you though, and I'm sure everyone asks you this, what was it like working in the Obama White House?
It was definitely a once in a lifetime opportunity. And I think anybody who worked there and during that time, which was such a critical time for the country, would say and feel the same thing. I mean, we got to work for a president who got up every morning, and frankly, a vice president who got up every morning and pushed us and asked us the question, were we doing everything we can to support the American people? And, you know, all of us who worked there really, really took that to heart. And, you know, if you recall, it was during a very tough time of recovery for the country, economically and otherwise. And, you know, in the context of the work that we were able to accomplish in the administration in higher ed, it was very much focused on where I continue to stay focused to this day, which is the heart of where student needs are, right? The heart of where, you know, access, opportunity, and economic outcomes intersect. And so to me, there was a lot of great work we accomplished, whether it was bringing greater transparency to the decision-making around going to college, understanding and leveling up new solutions for students to manage student debt as that was becoming an emerging challenge, opportunities for individuals to access their community colleges and providing an unprecedented amount of resources to really look at the anchors in our communities that were a core part of the economic recovery. And a lot of those lessons still hold true today, and it's a large part of the orientation that I bring into the role that I have. So you're absolutely right. I am an unconventional person to sort of lead a college. But in some ways, it is a really unique opportunity I see once again to have an impact in really the kinds of transformative change that we were engaged in the Obama administration. A large part of this work is, again, really anchored around the new challenges that we find ourselves facing and as a country, but also in the communities that we are set up to serve. In those communities, we understand that there's a growing divide and a growing challenge in terms of folks who can access real opportunity, folks who are being shut out of educational opportunities and also good jobs by virtue of the challenging and competing responsibilities they continue to have to manage, you know, whether it's raising a child or being responsible for elder care or finding that their skills are not as relevant as they once were in the context of a really dynamic and changing economy. And there are very few, I think, opportunities in higher ed to design from the ground up an entirely new kind of institution that centers its design around those learner needs.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny, I was going to ask you some of the obstacles you observe when it comes to adult learners trying to upskill and reskill. But I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head that we're in a complex labor market, we're in a complex education environment. And if we're going to meaningfully serve adult learners, it's not so much about creating or trying to replicate environments designed for 18-year-olds or 17-year-olds and trying to make it work for someone who's got you know, is juggling work responsibility, life responsibility. It's really about coming up with a model designed specifically for that individual. Like, it kind of stems from this whole idea, are we defining our learners as non-traditional, which is to say everything that doesn't fit the traditional model, or are we designing education meaningfully for the people that are coming through the doors?
I think that's such a great point. It's absolutely where we have to give folks a little bit of a color to the actual ways in which individuals are now experiencing the education market and the labor market, right? When we say non-traditional, unpacking what that means is important. It means that students are not able to show up at 2 p.m. on a Tuesday, every single Tuesday, for an in-person class while juggling a job with an erratic schedule and all of their other family and family commitments, other responsibilities, right? That doesn't set a student up for success for the new majority of students. It's not to mention the fact that the cost question in higher education is increasingly becoming a challenge. The fact that there's so much reliance on debt financing and the costs continue to escalate in a way that folks are starting to question the value of it, right? Whether they can afford the opportunity cost. Most folks we know and we talk to in our student body and those we continue to reach out to, we hear a similar story, which is they know and they understand they need to access and develop new skills, right? They're not afraid to learn new things. They have great capacity to learn new things, but unfortunately we haven't given them the entry points to do that. And I'll give you actually a couple of really impactful examples. I like to ground myself and want to ground your listeners too in who we're talking about.
Yes,
right?
Please. Yeah.
You know, one of the most interesting examples that we've come across of an incredibly committed student who moved to California from Hawaii, and she actually couldn't afford to complete her degree, right? So she was degreeless. She enrolled in our IT support program after completing, she found a job at a small IT support firm, right? A mid-sized firm, not a big Fortune 500 company. It was so impactful to her that as we stayed in touch with her, we came to learn that that foundation for her also gave her the route to be promoted twice and is now helping the company open another branch. And that was an access point that otherwise wouldn't have been available to her. Yeah. And the other story that has really deeply impacted me is actually of our student body organization president. So we have our first ever CalBright student body organization, and our president, Jeremy Cox, has a remarkable story in that, you know, he had completed an associate's degree in film and radio production 30 years ago. And subsequently, he spent his career in the restaurant industry. And after COVID, which we know disproportionately affected the service industry in some unalterable ways, Jeremy enrolled in our IT support program and is managing that and able to manage that while being a stay-at-home dad, and talks a lot about how the flexibility is actually what was most critical to his success at CalBright. These are real folks. They're not theoretical folks. And it is important to look at it from their perspective, not just an institutional perspective, or not just a perspective of what we might assume is challenging for our learners.
Absolutely. Well, do you want to know what? I mean, it's clear that what's happening at CalBright is helping to bridge some of these gaps. I mean, the most recent annual milestone report shows 167% increase in student enrollments. It shows a 146% increase in completion certificates of completion being issued. There are now 17 designed, validated, and approved programs. You've received accreditation from the Distance Education Accrediting Commission. Like, the needle is moving. As far as the work that's happening at the college. So what are some of the things that are happening at the college to address some of the key gaps that adult learners face when it comes to accessing high quality, flexible education? I mean, not just necessarily things that are happening in the learning environment itself, but in the design of the college itself that makes it such a welcoming place for this population.
Yeah, I love this question because it's one that everyone you ask in the organization contends with every single day. And it's important to kind of take a step back and think about both, you know, in the aggregate, who we're designed to serve, and then also kind of what we've come to learn and understand about where we go next. And, you know, a large part of that is when Governor Brown and then Chancellor Oakley first conceived of the college. There was a recognition that were 6.8 million Californians during that time that were aged 25 to 54 who had a high school diploma and no degree, just as a baseline, not even folks who were coming back with a degree for retraining. And it was a recognition that we didn't serve those learners effectively or well because there were, you know, sort of systemic level challenges or failures, right? Structural challenges in the way that we do education delivery. And we saw this evidenced with folks kind of taking it to their feet. And during the pandemic, we saw adult learners leaving the California Community College system at some of the highest rates. Even currently, if we look today, about 36% of students across the CCC system are 25 years of age, compared to 42% before the pandemic. So for us at Calbright, when we look at our numbers, 90% of our students actually fall into that age range. And we know this is not just a California issue, we know this is a national issue. And so as far back as I can remember, we would blame students and their circumstances for this outcome, right? These were hard to serve learners. And we didn't look at it as an institutional systems level failure and one that would require strategic and sustained investment and effort to solve for. So what we became, you know, what we assumed and then what we tested out and came to be true was the structure of our programs mattered a lot, right? It was not just that it was online. A lot of folks were increasing in online delivery. It had to be online, but flexibly paced. And it couldn't just be flexibly paced. It also had to be very skills-based. Can't be just skills-based. It has to be nimble and responsive and give folks the preparation they needed to be responsive to the dynamic economy where skills would continue to shift. And it had to not just be nimble and responsive, but also statewide and scalable. So when we're talking about what it takes to build a competency-based education model of learning in the context of what we're doing, we're thinking about it precisely from the perspective of how simple can we make it for the learner, right? How do we look at that end-to-end student journey and understand how to integrate learning and supports in the ways that our students need? How do we better customize to the needs that our students are identifying? So our support comes in many forms. It comes from ranging from tutoring and academic support to career services and coaching. And as I mentioned, we also are consistently looking for ways to build connection and community and network into our Calbright students' experience. So we talked a little bit about the student body organization and all the organic development that's happening there, but it's also in the ways that we leverage the place we build community in. So we build a large student community within Slack, which is a workplace communication tool that absolutely will be leveraged by our students after they leave our institution, right? It's the medium in which whatever knowledge economy job they transition into will be you know, something they will have to be facile with, whether it's Slack or another type of communications tool. So every action, every support, every opportunity is not just the availability of it, but the way that it features in the experience that our students have. A really important understanding for us was also in the context of that, how many barriers could we reduce? Not just how simple we could make it, but was there a need for device access and some 101 for folks who were less familiar with technology? Was there going to be a need for a hotspot or a way for them to continue to access connectivity in ways that were going to be required for them to really successfully engage in their coursework? All of these things have come together to kind of establish more of a baseline of what our students are experiencing today and are a really strong foundation for where we build going forward. And the other thing that I will mention, two other things I will mention, I think are critically important. One is the thing that we also don't necessarily do because our model of education is very siloed. We don't look at that throughput, that end-to-end experience for students and treat it as a singular journey. The second thing we don't do is we don't instrument to measure how does our effort or the things that we do or engage in work or not work, and how do we adjust for that? And so we spent a lot of time in building the foundation of the college since I've been president of the college, to really build that infrastructure, to really be able to measure what matters in our students' lives, to really measure what matters in our education delivery system, to understand how well we're doing, and to build in continuous learning and improvement. And a lot of people talk about continuous improvement, but very few institutions I have seen that have the capabilities to actually instrument to execute in that way. And then the last layer that I think is critically important and unique to us as an organization is, because we knew that the most important thing was going to be making sure that the most important voice at the college was the student voice and their lived realities, we started shifting our organizational activities, processes, systems, and methodologies to really focus on being more of a product-led, product-driven organization. And sometimes when I say that, I get a little bristle in higher education because
yes.
Am I commodifying college? All of these sorts of things. And we don't like to talk about the business of higher education, though the business is the part that often fails for us. We have started kind of intentionally using a bit of this language because there's no other comparable set of activities in the higher education industry that work, right? There's no sanitized language for product-driven or product-led approaches. And what is really important for people to understand about that is what it means to be product-driven, what it means to be product-led is inherently about methodologies, you know, practices, activities that are done to ensure that every action, every resource that's driven is grounded in the core needs of the user community, right? The community that we're talking about here, which is a community of learners that has very typically never been the beneficiary of really data-driven, evidence-based approaches that were underwriting their success.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up, and you mentioned right off the top that, you know, asking anyone at the college, there's a culture around this. It's embedded. And I was thinking about, we did a podcast interview with your colleague, Shannon McCarty.
Great, yeah.
I think last October.
Yeah.
And that's kind of exactly the focus of that episode, was really about how you create this data-driven approach to managing curriculum, how you leverage, how you institute a culture of continuous learning and adapting and updating. When you're talking about academic programming, that not to create a false narrative about our industry in any way, but it can take a while for things to get updated. We know that that's a knock on our space, is that we tend to be somewhat slow moving, especially when it comes to academic updates. So it's kind of fascinating to hear how that approach extends beyond just the academic environment and is applied to really every part of the institution.
It's interesting to hear you frame it up that way. And I say that largely because one of the things a lot of us have been thinking about, because our statutory mandate actually holds us to a different outcome than other institutions, right? We're held to an outcome to facilitate that labor market transition for our learners. And I think the distinction becomes very important to the how we have to organize our work, precisely because this question around where do we know the most relevant skills are, how do we come to know where the most important skills in a given industry for a given job are going to be? And so our labor market analytics work actually is very much anchored in understanding the economic systems that our students are entering into. And so that becomes a very different way to then understand if the thing that we are most conditionally focused on is the skills that are most relevant at the time that a student enters the job market, then that has to be the thing, that input has to be what's driving the content that our students get access to. And more precisely and intentionally, our engagement with our learners, whether it's on the teaching and learning side, whether it's on the intervention and support side, has to all be oriented to facilitate that outcome. And I mentioned the importance of that in contrast to traditional higher education, because in traditional higher education, I think the history has been that we have academic disciplinary content experts, which is great. But how do we maintain some of those things when, as you identified, the content becomes so outdated so quickly, right? We can never keep pace with that if the thing that we're most preparing students for in an institution like ours is the ability to enter the job market most credibly. And that feels like an important anchor for how we orient what needs to happen next for our institution. And I think we have incredible faculty and staff that are helping drive that work. And I say that Dr. McCarty's leadership has been incredible in terms of changing the work and the level of the work at the campus. And in particular, I think under her leadership, we're going to continue to see that focus on making sure that we are all, you know, culturally operating in the right way as an organization with regard to how we think about evolving programs and interventions, but also, and I think most importantly, changing those mindsets, right? Thinking about orienting everybody around our students' success and the engagement with students being the focus of that, you know, the core of teaching and learning, the core of understanding how to integrate supports.
Well, with that in mind, you know, that culture, the focus, the dedication to evolution to a certain extent, pardon the word usage. What do the next 5 years look like for Calibrite? I mean, where's the college going to continue to evolve?
It's a great question. We have a lot to look forward to at Calibrite. So the thing that I am probably most famous for saying is that we're a different college today than we were 6 months ago, and we'll be a different institution again in 6 months. So we're very much in rapid cycle change and progress over the next several years. And I appreciate you you observing a lot of the successes on which we are riding, right, with the momentum that we have. When you mentioned that our enrollment increased by 167%, that surpassed 3,000 students, and our certificate completion grew by 146%, and the validation of our 17 new programs. So at a high level, we're going to continue to increase enrollments, and that's something that's happening somewhat organically as we get better at serving students and reaching in and understanding, continuing to understand, evolve our understanding of what their needs are. We're seeing that uptick. We are also going to think about how we can set up to support as many adult learners as possible with programs that are going to continue to be relevant to California's labor market's needs. So you'll see some increasing in the programming side over the next few years from us. This fall, we're actually planning on launching to the public a new data analytics program that we've tested, and several more that'll be launching in this upcoming fiscal year. And the other area in which we are continuing to expand is really focusing in on building those mission-aligned partnerships across the state. So I'll give an example. Right now, we are partnering with UC Irvine's School of Education and the behavioral design nonprofit Ideas 42 and their academic affiliate, Ben Castleman, who's over at Nedge Labs in Virginia, to advance educational outcomes for adult learners through data and data science and behavioral strategies. Those are the kinds of partners, those who will accelerate the work that we are doing and the efficacy of what we're doing to see and boost our students' progress and our students' success, both in terms of completion and also in terms of labor market transitions. We're also thinking about these partnerships in the context of the many regions in California, the diverse regions in California that have unique circumstances in terms of where their economies are grounded and also where their economic development strategies are heading. And That's a continued place where we're going to sort of dive deeper into making sure that we can be the best partners and participants to support those efforts that a lot of amazing folks on the ground already have underway. The last part of that I'll mention, which I think is equally important, is in these areas, as a newer institution, when we say mission aligned, it is not just about purpose, it is also about action. And when we think about the work ahead for us, because we are priding ourselves on setting up a system in which we're constantly testing and improving and incorporating feedback, we also invite that engagement and participation from like-minded entities who are trying to solve the complex challenge for adult learners that we are engaged in. We don't think this is a silver bullet solution. We very much understand that this is an ecosystem approach and it requires an ecosystem responsiveness. And so we will continue to evolve our work being engaged with other partners on the ground trying to solve different aspects of this challenge. And, you know, I think the thing that we bring to the table that's perhaps most important in this is our capacity to really have the pulse on the experiences our students are having that are representative of the communities they come from, and our flexibility, nimbleness, and timeliness with which we can respond.
Let me ask you this. I mean, I think anyone who's watched higher ed news or has a feel for what's happening, the launch and the first few years for Calibrate, there, you know, obviously the college ran into some publicity issues, it ran into some challenges. I will tell you, from our publications perspective, we always loved the concept of it. But I'm curious, sort of as you reflect back on that period of time and to where you've gotten to today, what have been some of the lessons learned? Because I think there's a lot, we're seeing a shift in the post-secondary space towards really creative innovation happening in peripheral pockets of multiple institutions. And you see other institutions just trying wholesale changes. What are some of the lessons you learned from that experience of launching something new and innovative and, you know, getting from where you guys started to where you are now?
Yeah, I think I'll say simply, it's getting back to the basics. I think if you absolutely have followed the Calibrate story, there was a lot of noise around it. The first president exited after less than a year. There were a swarm of issues surrounding that, including a very public and politically driven state audit that really had focused on the actions during that period in the spring of 2021. So I actually assumed the leadership in the interim role shortly after that. So my responsibility was really to assess what was happening in the institution and kind of right the ship, so to speak. And I think it was just a couple of weeks before the pandemic onset. So just before we were thrust into that, you know, simple time in our lives. What you have to always do in that type of situation, but really in any ground up situation, I think, is understand that the thing that you are assessing for is what is in place. You know, what does the baseline look like? And what we found was that many of the basic, you know, enrollment management practices, student support policies and practices, those things were not in place, right? Our enrollment was low. Our website and internal systems were kind of a mess. We still had all the expectations of a private sector startup, but we were doing all of this and moving forward in a very public environment. So it's really putting our heads down and getting to work. One of the major ways that we looked to test our understanding of many of these things was in really designing a high fidelity launch of a Salesforce administration program. So that gave us an understanding of some of the core things that we're missing from the work that we were doing. We're missing from our core understanding of what the student experience needed to be. So in some ways, all of those activities that came before us, including the audit, presented a real opportunity for us to dive into core areas of development for the college that we were beginning to investigate to begin with. And what came out of the audit and our responsiveness to it really helped provide us the space to do some very needed deep dive work and planning that we've now come out on the other side of. So I think the major set of lessons learned, I would say, is that I've been reading. I have a new infatuation with Adam Grant. I don't know if you read him a lot, but he talks a lot in his books and his most recent one in particular about rethinking cycles. And I think we had a lot of assumptions about why some things might have been working or why some things were not working. And the intentional need that we had to really assess, why do we think this, right? Why do we think this is, why something is or is not working, and really being able to provide a space to begin to pull ourselves out of a set of potentially false assumptions that would be a rocky foundation to build on. And that I feel like that lesson is going to continue for us. We're in a much better place, obviously, that's evident in our progress and outcomes, but it's also such an important longstanding lesson to take with us, that we always want to be questioning how and why. And we don't want to carry some of the hubris that we see in traditional expertise circles, where there's less of a questioning of some of those things, less of a need to look at the data, surface the evidence, challenge our assumptions, test our assumptions, and be very comfortable with pivoting direction. And I think that is a very difficult thing for us to come to grips with in the public sector, because most often the pattern of behavior, for good reason, is that folks who highlight things that aren't working well tend to be punished for that, right? And we have to really change kind of the culture and the context in which we're working. And we've been very honest and transparent about that as an institution. We are happy to celebrate successes, and we have no shame about discussing what has been most challenging about our work, because we think that conversation is important and it's an honest one to have.
Well, I mean, it's always exciting to kind of get a glimpse into an organization where innovation, creativity, these are top of mind considerations. So Ajitha, I'm so grateful for you taking the time out to participate in this discussion. Now, the most important question of the day, because this is not just a higher ed podcast, we are also a food podcast. So if I'm going to dinner in San Francisco, where do you need to go? What's your favorite restaurant?
I really wrestled with this question. I find it to be an extraordinarily difficult to answer, just because San Francisco is the home of so many incredible establishments. But I will say that so many incredible restaurants have come and gone, and the one has been my favorite, kind of time tested, I would say, probably for about two decades, about two decades, I'd say, has been Burma Superstar. And it's an amazing Burmese restaurant that's in the Inner Richmond District in San Francisco, and moderately priced. And I've never left there disappointed, even takeout, because sometimes you eat in the restaurant and it's wonderful, and then the takeout is leaves something left to be desired. But I think that one is definitely a can't miss.
This is, I will say, that's, I think, the first shout out we've had for Southeastern Asian cuisine on the podcast. And that's, you've hit on something great there. I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Ajitha. It's really been a pleasure.
Thanks so much. It's been wonderful chatting and then also getting to know you a little bit. Thank you.
As well. This podcast is made possible by a partnership between Modern Campus and The Evolution. The Modern Campus Engagement Platform powers solutions for non-traditional student management, web content management, catalog and curriculum management, student engagement and development, conversational text messaging, career pathways, and campus maps and virtual tours. The result? Innovative institutions can create learner-to-earner life cycle that engages modern learners for life, while providing modern administrators with the tools needed to streamline workflows and drive high efficiency. To learn more and to find out how to modernize your campus, visit moderncampus.com. That's moderncampus.com.